All right, welcome to the weekend. I am Pia Muhlenbeck. I'm here with Kane.
Good evening.
And this is Wine Time, the show where we crack open a bottle of bubbly and suggest you do the same.
Not if you are driving. Make sure you get home first, then open the bottle of bubbly. We don't want any accidents.
And join us as we chat through the week that was.
So what are we drinking today, Pia?
So we have just opened a good old-fashioned bottle of GH Mumm Rosé. I love it. It gives me such summer vibes. I just feel like we are well and truly in the silly season now.
Oh, 100%. I started silly season about a week and a half ago now.
Yeah.
That's why my voice sounds bad for two reasons. First reason, we are currently living in post-apocalyptic Blade Runner air quality in Sydney.
Yes.
We'll come to that later. And also, we went to Fiji last week, which is maybe the reason why there was no podcast.
Yeah, that was definitely the reason why there was no podcast. Sorry about that. But I think Kane this time round is due for a bit of a forfeit, some sort of punishment.
Well, can I explain what happened first?
Absolutely.
So the podcast was recorded last week. It was great, as all of the episodes have been so far. we actually finished a job. I was working on a job for Pandora. The vlog is now up. If you haven't seen the story of our love, it is live on YouTube right now.
It's the story of how we met.
Yeah, but that video had to get finished before we went to Fiji. So I finished editing it and uploading it at what time? Quarter past midnight.
I remember it so clearly because I set my alarm for 2:30 in the morning to wake up.
Which is usually the time I go to the dentist.
But this time we had to go to the airport. So
we actually got 2 hours and 15 minutes sleep. My plan was to push the podcast live when I got to the airport at 6 a.m. or just before I fly at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And when we got to the airport, I opened up my laptop all ready to go and realized that I hadn't actually copied the podcast file, this thing on the Rodecaster, onto my laptop. So I didn't actually have any access to the podcast. So we recorded it like it was done, but I don't want to push it live now because it's all last week's news, and I think we're just going to roll some of those news things into this bumper episode and then go from today onwards.
Yeah, so we spent the next week in Fiji, which is something that we've done. It's actually the third time we've gone to this island because what they do is like a 5-day long sort of like a cultural festival type thing. So there's a bunch of DJs there. There's lots of different events, but it's kind of mishmashed into a tropical holiday. So we were, you know, kayaking, lying on the beach, drinking coconuts, and then in the evenings it turns into some cool DJs playing music.
But basically I think it's about $2,500 Australian. That includes your flights and your accommodation when you're there, and you're on this tiny, tiny isolated island in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. We do have a couple of vlogs from there, so Kane's just editing those together today, and they'll probably be live Monday, right?
I can't decide if I'm going to make one mega vlog or two mini vlogs. Right now, I've got a lot of incredible footage, so I just got to balance it out. I want to make sure that it's not a vlog that is full of really great cinematic shots, because that can sometimes turn people off.
Yeah, but it was tricky filming there and actually talking to the camera, because obviously with YouTube you can't include copyrighted music, and because we were at a music festival, it's very difficult to talk to the camera and include all of that footage. So
that's,
I think,
right,
there's going to be a lot of cinematics there. So I'm kind of thinking you should be doing one mega video and drop that on Monday.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
It's like a little Fiji tropical version of Coachella, but way smaller.
Oh, I think it's better. The cool thing is, because it's quite a niche boutique festival, everyone that goes pretty much are repeat customers.
Yeah, it's become like a little reunion thing for people. Like
I saw, I reckon, 30 to 50 people, like no joke, that I remember from years past.
Yeah, me too.
And let me tell you, when you turn up on a deserted island and you see someone that you've known from LA or from Sydney or something like that, it is such good vibes. You're immediately in a good mood because you're with a load of people that all kind of share the same love for that sort of music as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You guys should come next year.
Yeah, highly, highly recommend
it. It kind of feels like it kicks off summer for us, because we go, it's like there's a little bit less work. We were cracking out all our work last week as quickly as we could so that we could go and actually enjoy ourselves a little bit. And, you know, we vlogged here and there and things like that, but it very much feels like it's kind of the beginning of the holidays.
One thing I did want to talk about, I know that I'm going to sound like a scratch record or a Disney employee. I am neither, by the way. But this is a very special week for me, like very, very special.
Because for you specifically?
Me and all the other cool guys around the world.
Yeah, right.
Because we are 5 days away from the final Star Wars movie.
I didn't even know this.
Oh, what? Right, we're breaking up.
I have no idea.
I need to get divorce papers right now.
Grounds for divorce.
So I've been obsessing over The Mandalorian. Now, for someone that has loved Star Wars my whole life,
yeah.
The one thing I've noticed, just because they're old movies, is the picture quality is pretty bad. Now, The Mandalorian, the picture quality is so good. I don't even know what cameras they filmed it on.
Yeah.
But every scene in that show, oh man.
I've got to admit, it's making me appreciate the Star Wars universe.
Right? I'm getting goosebumps.
It's cool. Like looking at it, I'm like, you know those bikes that they got on the other day?
Speeders.
Oh, they're cool.
No, that's my next toy.
What? That?
I'm just going to get one with wheels.
Oh, I see.
Called a bike. Yeah, right. The reason I wanted to mention it today is it's not just me that thinks it's great. In the news yesterday, they said don't forget this Disney Plus thing only came out like 2-3 weeks ago.
Mm.
They've had 22 million app downloads.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know what that converts to in revenue, because obviously I think you get a 7 or a 30-day trial. So maybe, you know, everyone deletes it after the first month. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
I don't think so either.
But that is a big deal for a brand new streaming service. Mm. They are immediately up there competing with the big players.
Talking about Disney, and we are not sponsored by them. We're just grown-ups and fans.
It's a whole new world.
Oh, lucky you guys. What I was going to talk about is last night we watched this incredible documentary.
Oh yeah.
On the making of Disneyland.
Mind-blowing. I have
never ever been so impressed with a group of literal geniuses.
I just have to say again, hashtag not sponsored.
I am so mind blown. These animators, or what do they call them?
They're called Imagineers.
Oh. Not engineers, Imagineers.
I'm going to change my bio on Instagram to "One day I hope to grow up to be an Imagineer."
Oh, you're so cute.
I had goosebumps through that documentary.
Yeah,
we're only
you guys
halfway
need
through.
To watch it.
We watched, I think, the first two episodes, and so far, I think there's six up there. Just watching how Disney went from being a successful cartoonist, company, I guess,
yeah,
to then trying to convert and pivot his entire business from a cartoon company,
yeah,
into a theme park, which had, at the time, fairgrounds and theme parks had very bad reputations.
All the ones that existed were obviously nowhere near the level of something like Disneyland, and they were kind of dying because I guess they had like a creepy, unsafe sort of vibe to them.
Kind of. I mean, I felt that when I was a kid. I'll go to like the fairground near my house, the traveling fairground.
Yeah.
I mean, I always felt that I was being fleeced for money. Like I knew that I was never going to win any of those competitions.
Like distracting you over here while someone's pickpocketing you behind you.
I wouldn't go that far, but definitely like, you know, like the ring toss competitions, you're designed to fail.
Oh, I see.
Designed to not work,
yeah,
right? And so I think Disney had an uphill battle trying to create like a fake city.
Yeah.
That enthralled the population
It's still to this day the most eloquent example of urban planning.
Yes.
That's what's so impressive. Like, it's not just, oh yeah, what a nice theme park or something. Like the way it's basically a little city, and the way that it's structured is based on Paris. So like there's one there's one central point or central roundabout, and then all the streets kind of, you know, grow out from there so that you always have a sense of direction. You never feel lost.
Yeah.
Because you can always say to your friends, oh, we'll meet in the middle.
Yeah.
And you can always see where that is.
My favorite part of Disneyland when I went was the Epcot Center, which is the experimental prototype city of tomorrow.
That's not there though.
Yeah, Epcot's in Disney.
I thought it was in Florida.
Oh, that's in Disney World, sorry, yeah. So you've got fantasy, there's like four different worlds that each Disneyland has.
Yeah.
And then I think it was in Disney, the one in Florida, they built the Epcot Center, which was the prototype city of tomorrow, which is, to be honest,
I haven't been there.
Oh, we have to go. It is probably the one single thing that affected my life and made me love technology the way I do now.
Yeah.
I just wanted to live there. I didn't want to leave.
Really?
And now I kind of live in a tech house. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been shaped by certain things, yeah, haven't you?
Walt Disney, a lot.
Very, very cool. So yeah, big recommendation there if you want to check out something totally mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was just very interesting to watch how he had at some points in launching Disneyland almost complete failure financially.
Oh, I know.
Like a number of times things almost. And when it launched, it was a nightmare. There were so many counterfeit tickets because so many people wanted to go.
Yeah.
The park was overwhelmed and things broke and things didn't work. But
complete
still
disaster.
They just carried on and it's now probably the most amazing place on earth.
Yeah.
Not sponsored. No. But let's hope that Disney do listen to this podcast because I would love a free trip.
Yeah. Just send it to them.
That place is expensive.
Just straight
now.
Up send them a little cassette tape or something in an envelope.
We actually met a couple. Do you remember that? They were a weird couple.
Yeah.
They live in Disneyland.
You were like so close. To like, Kane's eyes are like sparkling in a really dangerous way. Darling, we are not moving out of Sydney to go move into Disneyland.
When I met them, I was like, you guys are weirdos.
Yeah, they were right? weird.
And then after about an hour, I was like, you know what? I could live here.
Given how smoky Sydney is, maybe it's not the worst idea.
No, the
maybe
smoke we do in need Sydney to consider. It's terrible right now.
I know. It still is. It still is.
If you're not from Australia, we have had bushfires that are at least now five times as big as the burning of the Amazon rainforest this year. And our government are completely inadequate and incompetent and have not bothered to put the fires out.
Our Prime Minister's barely even acknowledged it. You can literally, if you Google it, you can see. There are photos that honestly look like post-apocalyptic another planet. Like, so, you can't see the building in front of you.
Yeah, so last week, the general consensus from, like, kind of scientists was if you were an outdoor worker, like a tradesman, a builder, anything like that, the actual level of pollution in the air, if you spent all day outside, was the equivalent of smoking 36 cigarettes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can probably hear my voice is really croaky. That's just since I got back to Sydney and just breathing.
Yeah.
Like that's I'm not sick.
And your eyes get really dry and everything. It's actually really quite full on.
It's been really, really bad. It actually bothers me a lot. Inadequacies of the Australian government to react.
Yeah.
Worries me because, okay, we're dealing with a yearly bushfire that happens pretty much every year in Australia. Mm. This year is a lot worse due to climate change. I accept that. I think he allocated another 11 million last week. Meanwhile, he spent 250 million kitting out his plane to look like Air Force One.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's called Shark One.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I think he just wants to be Donald Trump. But like, so the resources aren't going to the right places.
Yeah. And all of the firefighters are volunteers. They're not even being paid.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe someone can let us know.
A lot of them are, I guess.
Australia has a huge volunteer firefighter service.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that in any other country. Maybe that's because Australia's so big. Yeah. But what it means is we've had 3 to 4 weeks of solid burning and these random civilians who are only volunteer firefighters are not sleeping. They're away from their work. They're away from their family. They're not getting any compensation. They're just doing it for the good of Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really bad. And the pollution is crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I'm interested to see whether they will keep the fireworks open or not.
Oh, for the New Year's Eve?
Yeah. The Sydney New Year's Eve fireworks are probably one of the biggest events that Sydney City puts on.
I think it is like the number one, isn't it? Because we are the first people in the world to get New Year's Eve. So our kind of celebration is broadcasted around the world.
Yeah. And it is enormous what they do. But given the pollution and the smoke in the air at the moment, there are a lot of people petitioning to cancel the fireworks so as to not add more fire to the fire.
Yeah, look, I don't know how I feel about that one. It's a tough one. I have two very opposite opinions. I'm trying to be realistic and look at this objectively, right?
Yes.
My first opinion is the people that are saying we should be giving the $6 million that we put towards New Year's Eve to the firefighters.
Yeah, so the fireworks normally cost around $6 million. So they're saying cancel them and donate this money to help the cause, right?
Okay, so firstly, I did a quick Google search. It's not $6 million. $6 million is $6.8 million is what goes towards the entire setup of the New Year's celebration.
So the entire event.
The entire event, which is the whole city of Sydney, right? So we're talking security, barricades, everything, not just the fireworks. I would imagine, and I don't know, I'd love someone to tell me, but I would guess, given what I know about Disneyland, and how much their fireworks cost. Not sponsored. I don't know. I really should work for Disney.
How do you know how much Disneyland's fireworks cost?
I'm just, man, I'm a real Disney fan. This is
so weird. How do you know?
I just know stuff. Yeah, I know stuff.
Fireworks in Sydney are enormous.
Okay, you really haven't been to Disneyland because.
No, I haven't.
It poops on Sydney. Let me tell you that.
No. There's no way that every single night they do a firework display that matches even closely the Sydney New Year's Eve fireworks.
Oh my goodness. There are so many people around the world right now shaking their heads in disappointment that you have never been to Disneyland. The parade at 10 o'clock is the most magical thing you'll ever experience.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Sydney New Have you never actually watched them, or are you always a bit too tipsy by midnight to like take it in?
Oh, I've never seen them. I've been flat out on the floor.
I'm telling you, it goes across the entire Harbour Bridge. It's all through different parts of the city. Yeah. It's just enormous. So it's one of the biggest shows in the world.
My level of interest in fireworks is pretty slim.
Yeah.
This is my level of interest in a fireworks session, right?
Mm.
I hear poof, 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 poof. Then my eyes look up and I say, ooh, is that fireworks I hear? And then I look down again. And then I'm not interested anymore.
Really?
I've seen fireworks my whole life. They are all the same and they're all very
boring.
Yeah,
I like the sparkly ones.
Yeah, but who cares? Like, honestly. Anyway, we digress. Like, fireworks are
boring. But I saw a pretty compelling article saying that Sydney, I understand that this event generates a crazy amount of revenue. It's like something like
$130 million was made last year.
Yeah.
So, we're going back to the firework thing, right?
Yeah.
I reckon out of that $6 million, maybe a million, I don't think more, but let's assume it's 2 million. 2 million bucks is spent on the fireworks themselves.
Yes.
So the change.org page, it's not a GoFundMe, it's change. It says, say no to the fireworks and give the money to farmers and firefighters.
Yeah.
Right? If we take the money from, it's not 6.8, let's call it 2 mil, and we send it to the firefighters, that is really good. However, you can't cancel an event 2 weeks out and replace it with anything else. It takes almost a year to set up Vivid. It probably has taken 6 months to set up this New Year's Eve thing that they're doing right now.
Yeah.
If you've only got 2 weeks out, you cancel it, send the money away. You've already paid all the suppliers as well, by the way. So
they've probably already paid for the fireworks.
I would guess.
I mean, it's a show, right? It has to be choreographed and everything. So all organized.
Yeah. So this GoFundMe page is a little bit poorly thought out.
Yes.
What they should have said is maybe don't have the fireworks, whatever, but give the GoFundMe page should say, let's give the profits from New Year's Eve to the firefighters.
Yeah.
Because then you're not giving 2 mil, you're giving 130 mil or whatever it may be.
But can you imagine how that would look on a world scale in terms of like entering a new decade?
How what would look?
Cancelling it and doing some other celebration in some way and giving all the profits from New Year's to environmental preservation.
I mean, the only way I see it happening, because let me tell you, as someone that's organized the smallest events in the world, 2 weeks is not enough time to reorganize an entire New Year celebration for an entire country.
Yeah. I know. That's the problem,
really.
The only
way I could see this working, from a financial point of view, where are they going to get more money from?
Yeah.
Like, these budgets were allocated months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
You know how slow government works. You can't change this stuff.
I understand this isn't probably realistic at all, but no. It's an interesting thing that has popped up. Like, there's nearly 200,000 people who have petitioned.
Well, it's actually up to 187,000 now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, 187,000 out of 25 million Australia, obviously nothing's going to change.
No. Unless the air quality is so bad on that particular day that they just can it.
I think the bigger thing that we need to consider is the respect. Yeah. Money is great. If we can allocate money to firefighters or not, that's cool. Out of respect for the people that are literally trying to put out fires, putting their lives at risk to put out fires and save homes, it's a bit of a poor go for us to be down here lighting fires and throwing them in the air.
That's what I mean. Right? That's their whole argument, disrespect.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Mm. I think it's more a matter of people have lost homes and died and, you know, are spending weeks and weeks fighting smoke and fires and trying to make this situation better.
Imagine everyone held their phones up, held the torches on their phones up, just held it up and we were just at midnight, we're all silent.
Yeah.
Absolute silence, no countdown, and everything was just black.
Yeah.
And we did a blackout. Mm. The rest of the world would be broadcasting that.
Yeah.
And if that was our statement against, we're not doing the stupid party because we've got to fix the planet.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Every other country that did celebrate, well, firstly, they would look bad. And every other country would look on and go, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's powerful. We should do that. So they're not going to do it because it's going to cut profits. Mm. I couldn't convince any company to not make $126,000, $126 million in one night just to make a political statement. Mm. It won't happen. So unfortunately, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah.
But that would be the most powerful thing anybody could do. And we would actually make so much impact globally.
Yeah, exactly.
I should be a prime minister.
Of what?
My own. I mean...
Let's buy a little island.
I'm Prime Minister of the bedroom.
arguable.
Anyway, that got really deep really quickly. I think we should move on to some lighter topics.
Like YouTube is over?
No, that's really depressing.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it is.
Also depressing.
YouTube is potentially over because they are now starting to take down channels and videos of anybody that has an opinion that is a little bit negative up to bullying.
No. It's harassment policy. It's not an opinion that's a bit negative. It's people who are downright harassing people. It's just giving YouTube the ability to remove videos without getting the creator completely outraged, because it's giving us some guidelines as to what's appropriate on the platform and what's not. And I do have to admit, there is a tendency for a platform as huge as YouTube to get a little out of hand on certain channels.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, there is some serious bullying and harassment going on there. Well, but it's a pretty popular genre on YouTube to kind of make videos about other creators that are kind of could be construed as bullying.
I mean, the thing is, YouTube started as that. YouTube, it was originally, you set up your webcam,
yeah,
you hit record, and you upload your opinion. Now, you can't have an opinion. If you haven't got an opinion that sways one way or another, then your content is boring.
Yeah.
And I think what people have found is, as content gets created, the more offensive, the more extreme, you know, you look at Jake Paul just uploaded a video yesterday, his music video. His audience are 9-year-olds and he's literally putting acid on his tongue. I have a whole podcast prepared called Idiocracy, which I want to do properly one day.
Mm-mm.
Just talking about kind of the level of stupidity that we're perpetuating in the world. And that's fine, because I actually don't mind if Jake Paul breeds a million other idiots.
Why?
As long as my kid is smart, it's going to rise to the top.
No way. It'll change culture and what's considered acceptable and things like that.
I'm talking about in terms of like living a sensible life and being able to make a decent wage. YouTube is a business. I know that everyone's like, it's the YouTube community. It is not the YouTube community.
Yeah.
YouTube is now just another TV station aggregator, right? They take content from all the best places and hopefully they become the portal that you go to when you open up your desktop or your phone.
And they make revenue by putting ads on it.
They only make adverts on content that is kind of not controversial, because big brands like Coca-Cola don't want to advertise on someone that's controversial. So it doesn't actually serve YouTube's interest to even have controversial content on its platform, because they can't monetize it. And let me tell you, with data costs, if you're streaming a 4K video and there's no ads running on it, you're costing YouTube a load of money in data fees.
Yeah, so they're looking for middle of the road content, nothing too offensive, nothing aimed at children, you know.
And nothing that's going to offend a large chunk of the population.
Yeah.
With that being said, go check out the diaries on youtube.com/Kane and Pia. It's the best stuff on the internet.
Good old fashioned middle of the road content. They're now kind of the aggregator of all different forms of entertainment, even things from TV. So now if they can get that kind of content, why would they want something that's explicit or bullying content on there? They don't. They just want to make it a great platform.
And again, you've got to think, if YouTube is a business, what do they want? They want the entire family watching YouTube instead of watching TV.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is largely happening. I think when we went to Brandcast this year, whatever it was called, and it showed the difference in TV viewing and how it's just slumped. It's dropped off the floor.
Yeah.
And how YouTube is going up. People are getting home and opening their Apple TVs or their Chromecast and just going straight to YouTube.
Mm.
You can't have a platform where the whole family watches, where you can give the remote to your kid and within two clicks they're getting content that is the most offensive stuff you've ever seen in the world.
Yeah.
YouTube don't want that, and the brands who are advertising on YouTube don't want that either.
Exactly.
So I really get it, but also there is this element of, are YouTube crossing the line when it comes to freedom of speech? Because they kind of maybe are a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very tricky thing for them to try to maintain. Do you know what I saw the other day, actually? Google released what their what Australia's top searched things were.
The zeitgeist.
And the first one was, you know, how to prepare for an apocalypse.
I have got a go bag in my cupboard that I always keep ready to go.
I bought Ken this years ago. It's like this little survival pack with like a little torch and one of those little Stanley knife things.
Yeah, a little portable heater.
Yeah.
A little thing to make fire. One of those silver sheets that athletes have to keep themselves warm. I'll be fine. Yeah. You guys might laugh, but let me tell you, when the apocalypse comes, I'm good.
Honestly, you look out the window.
I'll be in my Tesla. I'll be fine.
Biohazard mode.
Biodefense with mode activated. I'll be sitting there vlogging it. I also saw that Peloton, that electric bike company, you know, the exercise bikes.
Yeah.
They could come under more scrutiny this year.
Everyone's up in arms about their ad, which basically was just a wife, and her husband gave her an exercise bike for Christmas. And then she kind of films herself using it for a year and then shows him the video of her using it and is like, thank you, I love it.
I think it's because it's like the 2019 equivalent of buying your wife a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, is that what people are up and
arms
about?
Yeah, it's like, hey, chubby, I bought you this.
People are so weirdly outraged. I've got to be honest. I just don't see that much of a problem with giving your partner fitness equipment.
I mean, I think it's there's a lot of one-way outrage I see at the moment with the sexes. And it is a little bit, as a man, I'll be honest, it's a touch annoying.
So are they saying that it's sexist to give your wife something so that she can self-improve herself?
I mean,
it is, right? But then by that standard, isn't makeup sexist? Isn't any fitness equipment, a gym membership, anything like that?
Okay, that's an interesting one. Maybe this is where it gets so granular and, in my opinion, stupid.
Yeah.
You can go buy yourself lipstick because you're self-empowering.
But if you give it to me and suggest that I look better?
Yeah.
Stranger danger.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I saw this thing, Meshki, the clothing label.
Yeah.
They posted something, a meme yesterday that said, when you're 35, you're going to bump into the boy that broke your heart when you were 19 and you're going to laugh because he's now bald.
And are people outraged?
I was. I'm bald.
You're outraged.
I wasn't outraged, actually. I was just like, you know what? Screw you.
Do you feel body shamed?
Yes. I went bald at 13. I don't know. I had kind of weird alopecia sort of thing happening. So all my hair like fell out. It was bad. I had to go special hairdressers. At one point, one hairdresser made my hair like a bouffant, like Prince. Yeah, just anything to cover the bald patches. It was really embarrassing. And it really, like age 12, 13, 14, that's the beginning of your adult memories. Yeah. I don't really remember much before that. 12, 13, I remember just really crazy bullying at school. Anyway, so back to this Meshki thing, right?
Mm.
I sent them a message. I said, hey, just curious, is this a body shaming joke? Or would you view this as a body shaming joke?
Oh, right.
And they never replied. I wanted to get a reply and talk about this on the podcast, but they didn't reply.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, if that meme, said, when you're 35, you're going to laugh because the girl that broke your heart is now fat.
Oh.
Right?
Can't say that.
You can't.
No. Definitely not.
Similar sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And a girl that is overweight can fix it out of choice. I can't fix my baldness out of choice.
I mean, there are some options.
Oh, well, you won't let me get that wig I want.
I've tried a wig on you before. It's not great. Well, I like you bald. Luckily, you have a nice head, so you being bald is perfect.
I'm pretty tempted to still get that wig with the curly hair. I think I looked really dashing.
please don't let Kane get a wig.
If this podcast gets another 50 five-star ratings, I'm gonna be wearing a wig in the vlog from next week.
But no, I need to make this bomb now. I need to just make this bomb. This can't get 50 more five-star ratings.
No, but this outrage culture, it's definitely getting worse. I think a lot of people realize if they are outraged publicly,
yeah,
they get a little bit of extra attention.
Oh, it's a serious thing now. Mm. Like outrage culture, it's become a actual part of our culture. And people's default reaction to anything that offends us now isn't like a reasonable discussion or a little bit of, you know, discourse about a particular topic. It's just immediately goes to outrage.
Well, I think a good example is, what was her name? Hang on, let me take a quick look. Alex Bozargian. I can't pronounce her name properly, but the reporter that got her butt slapped in the marathon this week. Do you remember that?
Okay, look, I do think there are grounds for that to be a discussion. I don't think it's a completely crazy, outrageous thing, but this guy kind of had it coming. Okay, so what happened was Alex Bozargian.
Let's just call her Alex.
We'll just call her, yeah. She is a reporter in the States and she was doing a live broadcast of, I believe, a marathon. Mm. And you know how when people run past a camera or a live broadcast, they're just idiots. Like everybody wants to ruin the live broadcast. So everybody does bunny ears or like stupid dances behind the reporter.
Men are genetically engineered, genetically wired from birth, that if they see a camera, to stick up their middle fingers or pull their pants down and do a Mooney or do something stupid. Let me tell you, as a vlogger that vlogs in public,
yeah, yeah.
I reckon in the last year I've had 15 to 20 people, men, all of them men, in the background, especially in Byron Bay, pull their pants down and moony at me whilst I'm vlogging.
It's delightful.
And I'm like, oh my goodness, why is that funny?
Yeah, I don't understand why that's funny.
It's
either.
A man thing.
It's just the most simple form of humor. It's somebody who can't string together an actual joke has to do that to get a laugh from his mates. Yeah,
exactly.
But anyway, so this guy was kind of running past in the marathon and everybody was doing, you know, like a wave or something like that. He runs past and slaps the reporter, a young girl, on the bum.
No, I'm going to come to his defense. He apparently tapped her on the back.
He says he tapped her on the back. He clearly full on hardcore slapped her on the bum. She was so taken aback. She like, the wind was like taken, her breath was taken away.
No.
She couldn't believe that somebody had just run past and slapped her on the butt while she was in the middle of her job. She was in a professional environment doing a live broadcast to millions of people and got slapped on the butt. So obviously that is like crossing the line. Like we have now well and truly established that men should just really, everyone should just really truly keep their hands to themselves.
I
and
agree.
Not pinch girls' butts, especially not in a, you know, professional environment or anything like that.
It is weird. And I'm not making excuses for the guy at all because I think, you know, he's really messed up. He's a 43-year-old man.
Yeah, he's also married.
He's a pastor or a youth minister.
Youth minister.
And I think he's a Boy Scout leader. Like he's probably, in his community, he's probably a really angelic character. So I do believe this is a lapse of judgment. I don't believe that what you're seeing is his day-to-day.
Do you know what? I think because he's in his mid or late 40s or whatnot, I think he just hasn't realized how inappropriate that is now. Because I feel like 10 or 20 years ago, it was a lot more commonplace for a guy to like slap a girl on the butt in a joking manner.
Have you seen the TV show Mad Men?
Yes.
It's pretty much, like it's crazy.
Yeah. So like growing up in that kind of environment, I think especially the older generation have not quite grasped how inappropriate that is now.
Yeah, I think so.
You know what I mean? So I think for him, he probably didn't mean it to be a crazy, malicious, like sexual harassment situation.
Yeah, I don't think he went into the situation thinking this is going to be a sexual assault.
I don't think he went into this situation thinking this is going to ruin my life,
no.
Lose my job.
Maybe. We don't know if he has lost his job.
Well, he's now on many TV stations and she is hamming it up and like looking to press charges.
So again, come back to the outrage culture thing. If that was me and I had my bum slapped, I would have been happy with a private apology and then moved on.
Yeah.
I would have gone, look, I get it. We all make stupid mistakes.
A private apology doesn't mean anything if he did it on live TV. That's the problem.
She could have tweeted, he apologized, I'm cool. But she has taken
people aren't satisfied with that anymore.
That's right. She's taken it to the next level. And as a man, I can't say whether that's right or not because I've not been in that situation. So let's go with what she's doing. And she's kind of really amplified it. Maybe she was actually kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
But for the sake of other women around the world who have to put up with this stuff in private in their offices, she's taken a stand so that the entire planet now knows, oh,
inappropriate.
That is inappropriate.
Yeah, he's being made an example of.
Yeah, so if from that viewpoint, I think it's good.
Yeah.
I do feel very sorry for the guy because when you watch him in his interview, I'm like, oh, you are potentially going to have a difficult few months ahead of you.
Yeah, I just don't think he realised the repercussions that he'd be facing. No. The other thing that people are now outraged about is the former Miss Ukraine. So she won Miss World in the Ukraine.
In the Ukraine, yeah.
She actually won the title and then about a week or two later, the organisers found out that she had a five-year-old child and she was stripped of her title. They took her, you win a fair bit of money. So they took all her money back.
Like $50,000. And you win a few year-long contracts. Like the girls in Australia win contracts with Colgate and stuff like that. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And so she was totally stripped of the title because she has a kid. Now, she did actually enter the competition and lied on the application form. Like she said that she didn't have a kid. Well, now she's going, you know, to the press and threatening to sue the Miss World organization for discrimination. These kind of rules have no place in modern society.
I'd completely disagree.
Like a young woman, do you?
100%.
What? So because a young woman has a baby, she can no longer become Miss World?
No, it's not about the baby. It's not about Miss World. It's not about being a woman. It is about setting the precedent that you can go into a competition or into an event, understanding the rules, signing your life away on the waiver, saying I agree to these rules, and then afterwards when you're busted, Well, I'm suing you then. That is outrageous. I think the cutoff age for Miss Australia, Miss World Australia, I think it's 28 or 27, something like that.
Right.
Imagine you entered at 29 and you lied and you signed it and said yes. And then you got your title stripped of you because it came out you're actually 2 years too old. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to sue you for age discrimination.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can't. That's crazy.
Well, people are backing her up here.
Well,
I mean,
idiots are backing her up.
No, I think, look, I understand that she entered this knowing that she was lying on the application form, but I do think the conversation needs to be had as to whether or not these rules are archaic.
You've got to separate out the situation and the person from the precedent of what it is to understand rules. Now, I don't like the rule.
Do the rules exist?
It doesn't matter. It's a private competition. The rule in my house is none of my friends can come in and smoke because I have a smoke-free house. Yeah? If somebody comes in and starts to smoke and I say, no, get out.
And they sue you for discrimination.
It's my rule. I can do what I like. It's a private house. Miss World is a private competition.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I don't think it's a publicly traded company. I don't know. I might be wrong. It is private because Trump used to own it.
He used to own Miss USA.
Whatever, same thing. It's all, I mean, it's a beauty pageant, right? I mean, we're quibbling over people that are literally being judged on how hot they are. This is crazy. I know there's like, the personality aspect. No one's judging the girl because she likes horses and hopes for world peace. They're judging her on her figure, her teeth and her hair.
Yeah.
That's it, right?
Yeah. But look, she's getting a lot of traction and people are now outraged at the rules.
But it's great. Again, outrage culture wins for the idiots, doesn't it? So she's outraged. She's getting way more attention. I didn't even know this girl existed and she's the winner.
Yeah.
Now the whole world knows she exists. Once again, outrage culture wins.
Yeah.
She's probably going to have a huge career now.
Honestly, this outrage culture needs to stop because what is actually happening is people are being outraged constantly at things that kind of don't really deserve to, you know, they're not outrageous things. I saw this study that was from Slate.com and for about a year they wrote down everything that people were being outraged by.
Yes.
And what they ended up concluding at the end of the year is that the same kind of level of response happened for something that was pretty much a minor event as something that was truly an outrageous event.
Well, yeah, because nobody responds to anything really. We'll just go, oh, that's terrible. And we type it out on Twitter how angry we are and then we get on with our lives. No one actually responds to anything anymore.
That's right. And it gets this huge, you know, huge backing for a while. Then we're the whole, you know, everyone's outraged and then it might turn into an apology and then we move on and find the next thing to be outraged by. But what is happening, it's like the kid who cried wolf.
Yes.
It's like we're constantly outraged by all these things that don't actually deserve, you know, they're not outrageous things. And when something that really truly deserves our attention, we no longer have the words or the capacity,
or we just don't deal with it,
to feel outraged by it.
Yeah, I know, it's really crazy. It's very, very strange, but hopefully it will get better. I think the only thing we really need to be focusing on right now is our planet. If we can make the planet happy, I think everything else will fall into line.
Agreed.
Right, I'm using our conspiracy theory music for the Q&A today.
Well, why?
Because I just really like this song.
And you don't have a conspiracy theory, I assume.
Oh, no, I forgot to research one. So
you desperately want to include this song in the podcast.
I sometimes like a bit of audio in the background. Kind of good vibes, you know?
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. All right, it is now time for Talk To Me In My Ears, the best segment of today's podcast.
The segment we've all been waiting for.
Everyone's been waiting for this. Judging by the number of questions that are coming in, I think people actually really like it.
It's really fun. I love listening to you guys' voices. It's really different feeling to reading comments in like a comment section. Actually hearing you guys, you know, send in a voice memo is super cool.
Yeah, so if you don't know, you can click the link in the description of this podcast and it will go to anchor.fm/ I think our names, and you can leave a voice
you
message.
You don't know? Did you just give a link and you don't know?
Yeah, I forgot.
I think our names.
Don't type I think our names. Just click the link. Go click the link and you can send a voice message directly to us, which is linked straight into our mixing desk here.
Yeah.
So we can play back your questions in real time and it's like a real interactive thing, which I love, because what I've found is when we see people in the street, people that meet us and come say hi really feel like they know us.
Yeah.
Because they watch the vlog or they listen to this or anything like that. But I don't know people back, if that makes sense, because they're new, but we're not new to them.
Yeah.
Which I love. I think it's cool. But with the podcast, being able to hear you guys' voices,
it's really cool.
It makes it all so real.
Yeah, it makes it feel way more real than like looking at numbers on an app or something like that.
I've also found that a lot of people in Latvia can speak English, which blows my mind.
Love you guys in Latvia.
Number one in Latvia,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks for all the support.
Yeah, make sure you carry on rating this podcast 5 stars. If you do, you'll get a big hug from us if we see you in the street. If you rate us 4 stars, you'll get a high five. If you rate us 3 stars, you'll get a handshake. And if you rate us 2 stars...
you get a disapproving nod.
Very disapproving.
Maybe even a, what do you call this? A finger wiggle?
A waggling finger of disgust.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're going off on a major tangent. It is now time for Talk to Me in My Ears. And our first comment is from Sophia.
Hi, Kane and Pia. My name is Sophia and I'm from England. I've been watching you guys for a few years now and I love everything that you do.
Oh.
And I love how happy and joyful you are all the time. But on that note, I have a question for Kane, and it is, how did you become such a skeptic? Was it a series of moments or a moment in your life where you decided to be skeptical about everything? Because I've noticed listening to your podcast that you are a very big skeptic, and I found it intriguing. And secondly, how do you remain so joyful and happy when you are so skeptical about everything? Because all the pessimists I know are quite grumpy, especially in England. So yeah, I just thought it'd be interesting to know how you find the balance as well.
Oh, Thank you. Love you guys. Such a funny message. You are skeptical.
I didn't realize I was a skeptic. I like to always view myself as a realist. I'm the person that will look at things and I try and, maybe I'm completely wrong. Judging by that, maybe I'm wrong. But I've always thought that my opinion is straight down the middle, accurate.
You just think you're always right. See, I'm without a doubt an optimist.
I've always thought I'm the voice of reason.
Yeah.
And I did a test the other day. I mean, this might not be accurate, but I did a Have I Got ADHD test online, right?
Mm.
And it said that one of the core traits of what it turns out I do have ADHD.
You really... Darling, you cannot do an online test and medically diagnose yourself with something.
I'm not medically diagnosing myself.
You just said, turns out I have ADHD. What did you fill out, a Dolly quiz?
No, it was like 20 questions.
Online?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is like the number one rule of medicine.
Yeah,
don't Google it.
Don't Google your illness. I know, but I have been struggling a lot recently with my ability mentally to focus. I'm really noticing, and it's like, the reason I did this test is because it's been deteriorating rapidly over the last few months. So now I'm finding I can focus on something for 5 minutes. Then I grab my phone and I open Twitter. Then I get bored of Twitter. So 30 seconds later, I open a browser on my computer and my brain is so fried that I'm opening Twitter on my browser and it's already open on my phone.
Yeah.
And then I go back to my phone, open it, and it's like I'm really struggling with concentration. And I've kind of thought back, wow, that's kind of how it's been my whole life. So that's why I did the ADHD test. And it turns out that maybe I should consult a medical professional.
Yeah.
Before. It didn't give me the all clear, put it that way. But in terms of being a skeptic, I am very skeptical. Until I met Pia, a lot of things in my life went wrong, right? So I think you inherently when that happens, you start to build up this resilience to positive news and people's good intentions. I think you start to feel...
You question everything.
You question everything.
You question people's motives.
Correct. And yeah, that's where I've been. So potentially that's why I am the way I am now. I've never really thought of myself as a skeptic, but now you've said that, I'm going to add that to the list of things that I am.
Well, I think in the last podcast, literally every story that we talked about, you were like, yeah, they're just doing this to go viral and stuff like that. Like, I don't think it's anything super serious that you're skeptical about, but I think you just question people's motives, especially in this kind of...
That might be what it is, this industry.
Yeah.
But interesting you've said it, because I think I should work on it. I don't think I should be so skeptical.
But you're definitely not a pessimist. Kane really loves life.
I love life.
Yeah.
I love animals.
He really loves life. He, it's not pessimism. It's just, I guess you do question things.
I look at things very mathematically.
Very
like
pragmatically,
everything.
Very matter of fact. And you kind of just break things down. And sometimes it puts into perspective, if something's going wrong and I'm kind of like really emotional or affected by it, he will then sort of sit down and talk about it in such a pragmatic way that you realize, oh, in the grand scheme of things, this means nothing.
Yeah,
or
that's
this
right.
This is fairly irrelevant. So I think you just have a different way of looking at things.
Yeah. And in answer to your question of how do I stay so happy, even though I'm a skeptic, I just cry myself to sleep every night.
cradled in my arms,
sobbing like a baby. Yeah, I don't know. That's actually really made me think. Let me think about it this week, and we'll talk about whether I'm a skeptic properly next.
This
week.
Is like therapy for us.
I know, I love it. Send me your therapy questions about me, and I'll answer them. Well, if you're a therapist,
you want everyone to psychoanalyze us.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I'm not like.
Let's do another quiz online.
When I was a kid, my mum used to call me quirky. Like she's referred to my personality type as quirky.
Yeah.
Which is not a word you ever want to be like. I don't ever want anyone to call me quirky. So there must be, that's a mum's way of saying, yeah, he's nuts.
Yeah, but you do have a kind of unusual way of thinking about things.
Do I?
Yeah, which is why you're interesting to talk to.
Oh, man. All right, send me your questions about, I don't know, send me your really deep questions and
the
I'll answer.
Self-realization he's having right now.
Oh, no. I feel like I need to, maybe I should go see a psychiatrist. I've thought for years that maybe a little bit of therapy would be a good thing for me. Ever since I was probed by that alien.
And then you'll be at the therapist, like, questioning their motives.
Making them do an online test first to make sure they're a good therapist.
You'd come out of there being like, no, I know what they're doing.
They're doing
I know
it for the money.
Yeah, they just said this to make me do this.
You'll never guess what. At 59 minutes, she asked me a really deep question and it ticked over into 2 hours. I know what she's doing. She's doing it for the money. Yeah. The only thing I know about the next message is the title is Alien Encounter Message. Here we go.
Hey guys, it's Linda from London. I just wanted to say that I love your podcast and I've been thoroughly enjoying it. Kane, I especially loved your alien segment. I found it absolutely hilarious.
Wasn't
the encounter
funny.
You had with the spaceship. And I'll be sure to keep my eyes peeled for that one. And yeah, good job, guys. Have an amazing weekend.
Wait, hold on.
Did you note a hint of sarcasm?
It was purely sarcastic. That wasn't a joke. That wasn't a joke story. That was an actual account.
Yes.
This is the problem. I've now been put in the tinfoil hat person basket.
Yep.
And you wonder why I'm a skeptic.
You're well and truly in that basket. I love it. Thank you very much. I'm so pleased that you're enjoying the podcast and all our factual stories.
100% true. 100.
I actually put a decent amount of effort into researching things for this podcast, and your favorite segment is Kane's alien encounter.
Fictional story, apparently.
Fictional story.
Very unfictional. Very unfictional.
Well, keep an eye out in London if you do see any, you know, spacecraft or unidentified flying objects.
Yeah, tweet me. I want to see these things.
Yeah, call in and give Kane some confirmation.
Oh, time is up, and that's where we're going to end today's episode of Wine Time. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure you're subscribed and have hit that 5-star rating on this episode. Every little bit helps, so we really appreciate that. If you fancy keeping up with our antics outside of this podcast, you can always follow us on Instagram. The links are in this description, or you can check out our YouTube channel where we post at least 2 videos a week. If you'd like to check out our website, which has heaps of posts as well as all our photo and video presets, head over to kaneandpia.com. That's www.kaneandpia.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one. We'll be right back.